computers. Let's open with prayer and then we'll begin. Heavenly Father, we just thank you so much for the reading of your word. We give you praise and glory for it is from you. I ask that you would be with us during this time of study and let the words that come out of my mouth reflect your glory and that they would be your words and not mine. In Yeshua's name, amen.
Can you put the headset on?
Okay. Okay. In this Torah portion, we find ourselves in the middle of a plot to kill the favorite son of Jacob. Often it is not the public things that a man does that reveals his heart. Rather, it is the one thing that he does that does behind when no one is looking at him. The character of the ten brothers were revealed when they went against their brother. In much the same way, it is not what we see with our eyes that is true. It is the things that are done behind the scenes. There we go. This is determined the outcome. The things that are done behind the scenes is determines the outcome of the war. What the deals are made behind closed doors, you know, the slaps on the back and the smoke-filled rooms, will determine the fate of the innocent. It goes on today in how to get rid of the image of God that we face from the face of the earth. If we want to ensure, they want to ensure that he does not return. There would be no believers on the earth for him to redeem the bride of Messiah. So in all this, the war is not just with flesh and blood, but it's also the spiritual war that we don't see. It's the things that are hidden from our eyes. If we were able to see just for a brief moment what is going behind the scenes, would literally frighten us to death, and we wouldn't be able to cope with it. Much of us would go insane. For the veil that is to hide from us the things that are spiritual is there for a reason to protect us, and that we are to operate in this cloak that so that we can operate within the kingdom. For if we were able to see the things that were going on behind the cloak, we wouldn't be able to cope with it. In Revelation 12, 1 through 17, it reads, "And a great sign was seen in the heaven, a woman clad with the sun, with the moon under her feet, and on her head was a crown of 12 stars. And being pregnant and cried out in labor, she gave to give birth to a..." Not big enough for me to see. "And to give birth. Another sign was seen in the heaven, and see a great fiery red dragon having 7 heads and 10 horns and 7 crowns on his heads. And his tail draws a third of the stars of the heavens and throws them to the earth. And the dragon stood before the woman who was about to give birth to devour her child as soon as it was born. And she bore a male child who was to shepherd the nation with an iron rod. And her child was caught up away to Elohim, to his throne. And the woman fled to the wilderness, where she had a place prepared by Elohim to be nourished there 1,260 days. And there came to be fighting in heaven. Melech and his..." or Michael and his messengers fought against the dragon. "And the dragon and his messengers fought. And they were not strong enough, nor was their place found in the heavens any longer. And the great dragon was thrown out of that serpent, of old, called the devil and Satan, who leads the world astray. He was thrown down to the earth, and his messengers were thrown out with him. And I heard a loud voice saying in the heavens, Now have come the deliverance and the power and the reign of our Elohim and the authority of his Messiah, the accuser of our brothers who accused them before our Elohim day and night, has been thrown down. And they overcame him because of the blood of the Lamb and because of the word of their witness. They did not love their lives to death. Because of this, rejoice, O heavens, you who dwell in them. Woe to the earth and the sea, because the devil has come down to and having great wrath, knowing that his time is little. And when the dragon saw that he was thrown down to the earth, he persecuted the woman who gave birth to the male child. And the woman was given two wings of a great eagle to fly in the wilderness to her place, where she would be nourished for a time, times, and a half a time. And from the presence of the serpent, and out of his mouth, the serpent spewed out water like a river. And the earth helped the woman, and the earth opened up its mouth and swallowed up the river, which the dragon had spewed out of his mouth. And the dragon was enraged with the woman, and he went to fight the remnant of her seed, those guarding the commands of Elohim and possess the witness of Yeshua, Messiah. It is the plot of the enemy to get rid of the followers of, and there will be no legal reason. So if the enemy is able to get rid of us all, there will be no legal reason for Messiah to return, because without the bride, there would be no reason for the Messiah to come. This has been the plot from the very beginning, that if he couldn't get rid of the Messiah, which he tried on the cross, and he found out very quickly that it was the wrong choice that he did, that he would go after the believers, and he's been doing that ever since the cross. Every time we look at the major points in history, we look back and see that the persecution of the saints has been going on for time and time and time again, with war and with famine and with pestilence and persecution, burning at the stake. Nero had the Christians wrapped in cotton and burning them as torches. We were persecuted even from that time forward, even to today. Yes, the persecution took on different forms and methods, and it's by deceit. It's not so much in our face anymore, so we think, hey, everything's okay. Eh, we're a little safe now. We're going to be all right. We'll make it to the end. We can sit in our easy chairs and not have to worry about what's going on around us. But the enemy has a different plan. He's relentless. He will go after us. He will tempt us. He will try us. He will make us doubt the calling that God has put on our lives. Yahweh has a different plan, and that was through Noah. So he was trying to get us under his control before the flood. It almost worked. Had it not been for eight people who were still faithful and pure in God's sight, that the earth would have been destroyed and we wouldn't be having this discussion today. But Noah and his three children and his wife and their husband, or the husbands and their wives, that eight of them were surviving the flood. They started over again. And had it not been for that, we'd all been doomed. And mankind wouldn't have a happy ever after story like we will see in Revelation when he comes back to rule and reign over the earth. It will not be happy for those who follow the enemy. Their sentence is sure. The enemy is plotted to get rid of the followers of Messiah will be because he wants no legal reason for his return. He was nearly successful with his plot to make all of humanity fall under his control. Yahweh had a different plan, and that was through Noah. This is a truism that the battle is not won in a tent, it is won on the battlefield. Anyone who thinks otherwise is totally wrong. Having served in the military, I realized this, that the true leadership is not sitting on the top of the ship, is those who are firing the cannons, those who are firing the missiles. It is those on the battlefield are actually winning the battle or losing it. We are on the battlefield for our very existence, and our battle is not with flesh and blood. It is with the enemy of our soul and with God's army. And when we realize that, we soon see that what we that the things that are in front of us is not really the reality of it, is what's going on behind the scenes. A true leader does not lead from the comfort of an easy chair. Rather, he leads the troops in the battle, and with them the good times and through the good times and the bleak times when it all seems lost. It reminds me of when Washington was a general in the Revolutionary War. He didn't lead from a tent. He was out there in the battlefield with them. He was riding his horse, commanding the troops, telling them which way to go, which way the enemy is weak. In fact, it was the battle at one point was so great, the enemy was firing directly at Washington, and they couldn't understand why he didn't fall. I mean, they were firing pretty close to him. And at the end of the battle, he took off his hat, rubbed out the shots that were in his hair, and they were just astonished. God had protected them through this battle. And in much the same way, every single battle that God wins, which is all of them that he fights, his people are protected. We don't see it all the time, and some of us fall, but they're often resurrected on the battlefield, according to books like Jasher and other places, that they rise up and they fight again and again and again, and it just literally wears out the enemy. We don't know how this battle in the end times is going to take place, but the closer we get to it, the more we see that we need to depend upon him and everything that he does and listen to our leader. The 10 brothers of Joseph made an evil plot against their brother. The outcome was that they sold him for 20 pieces of silver. And it was not through them directly. It was through the Ishmaelites, to the other people that went along back to Egypt. Joseph was not a leader at that point, but he became a leader in Potiphar's house. He became a leader of all of Egypt. Potiphar was like a training ground for Joseph. His character was tested over and over again. It was at Potiphar's house that his character was tested through his Potiphar's wife. Was he stand for God when nobody was looking around? There was nobody around at this time that he was in Potiphar's house. He could have taken advantage of the situation and gave in to her. But he chose, how can I do this? My master has given me everything under his control. He's given me all of his household to guard and to make prosper in his hands. He doesn't even know what he has anymore. The only thing he cares about is what is in his stomach. He feeds them. It's all he cares about, what's in his stomach, and then he goes away and leaves everything entrusted to me. How can I sin against him, and how can I sin against God? The time of this battle didn't take place at that time. It happened beforehand when Joseph made a decision what he was going to do. Our testing doesn't start when the day of the testing is. It happens before then. And the decisions that we make during that time of the easy life that we have sometimes. Sometimes that these decisions happen that we make, and we're not certain as to which way to go, to the right or to the left, and God shows us go to the right or go straight on this course, and we don't understand it. But by learning to listen to him, when the battle starts, it will be too late to make a decision then. We need to make our decisions now on how we're going to serve our master, Yahweh. And if we don't do it now, when the times are getting hard right now, or where we're standing out on these positions as to who the Messiah is and when is his coming going to be and what we're going to do in the time of test. If we're not doing that now, then when the day of the testing comes, we're going to be lost. And we're not going to know what to do then. And hopefully, we'll remember, hopefully, that Yeshua is in control and we'll have peace and confidence in what he has done and not what we do. Yahweh always places his people in the right place at the right time. If you are not where Yahweh wants you, then everything you do will be mundane and not satisfying. I've seen people in the places I worked at that did not like where they worked at. They always ask for raises. They always think, well, my job is more important than this. I should be getting paid more. When I was in the military, people who complained the most were dissatisfied. They wanted more money. But it wasn't the money that was the issue. It was who they put their trust in. They didn't trust in God. They trusted in themselves, and they weren't happy in the position that they got. And if you notice, no matter where Joseph was, he never complained. Rather, he used what Yahweh had given him because Yahweh had prospered him in all that he did. He didn't complain that he was in the pit. Oh, yes, Jasher says he was crying and he was asking them to just have some reasoning and get him out of the pit. But they wouldn't even do that. They just totally disregarded him. And they more or less, they really wanted him dead. They didn't want to listen to him anymore in his dreams. Yeah, he was 17 years old. But the thing about it is, when they sold him into slavery, and Yahweh put him in Potiphar's house. So he puts us where he wants us at. Did you hear any time that while he was in Potiphar's house that he complained about the job that he had? I don't see it even in Jasher. I didn't see it in Genesis. I didn't see it in any of the writings I looked at. He listened to what God had to say to him. He just followed what God told him. He relied on what his dreams were. He relied on what God has told him, prepared him for. If we're not doing that now, when the times come that are going to be really hard, what are we going to do then? Everyone may seem to turn their backs on you. You need to know this, that Yahweh does not turn his back on those who love him. He is our rear guard. He is our front guard. He is with us when we go out. He's with us when we come back. He's better than any general or any admiral that I ever seen. Not only does he there before us, he's also there behind us. He's there with us in the thick of things. All we have to do is ask him for help, and he's going to be there with us if we love him and do what he says to do. But if we turn our backs on him, don't expect that he's going to be with us then. Oh, he may try to get us to come back, but there's going to reach a point in time where he's going to say, that's it. You're on your own. These are the decisions that you made. Now you have to live with them, and you have to pay the consequences for the decisions that you made. And that's going to be a very sad place for us to be at. Yahweh blessed Joseph and showed him favor. No matter where you may find yourself, if you love him, he gives you exactly what you need at the time that you need it. We often get distracted by, well, this person has this, and their ministry is this, and I need this, and I don't have that. And well, have you gone back to Yahweh and asked him what is going on and asked him to lead you in the place that he wants you to be at? Or are you just going along and just trying to get by? When the things do not go the way you think they should go, what do you do then? Do you draw closer and lean in closer to Yahweh? Or do you run as Jonah did run? He spent 3 days and three nights in a big fish. Not a very good outcome for somebody who is a prophet of God. He knew exactly what God wanted to do with Nineveh. And yet, because of the animosity that the Jewish people had and the Ninevites had, he couldn't see how God could forgive these people. They were very wicked people. He says, oh, I know you, God. You're just going to forgive them. And he says, well, that's not for you to determine. They need to know the message. Your job is to deliver the message. Oh, I know better than you. I'm going to go the other way. I'm going to go this way instead of that way. I know where Nineveh is. I can get there in a day. But I'm going to go this way because I don't want to do what you want me to do. But because Jonah was the man of that God wanted to use, he was going to show him a lesson. He had a fish prepared for him, and he went into the fish for the fish's dinner instead of the fish being his dinner. So just because he found himself in the belly of a fish, it brought him something that he needed. He needed a reality check. What do you plan to do when you're in a position you can do nothing? People get in injuries. They get laid up. They get a broken ankle. They get a broken foot, a broken back. And yet, that's the time they grow the most because they learn to lean on Yeshua. And they learn to listen to what God has to say, because that's the time that they're listening now. And all along, he tried to get them to listen before that, but they weren't listening until that very minute. The fact is that we are at war and our enemy knows it. Why don't we know that we are at war? The enemy has put us to sleep. Wake up. Fire is at your door. You have but a few moments left to say your goodbye. Or you can get up out of bed and fight your way out of that fire. And the only way you're going to do that is with Yeshua on your side. Because other than that, your house is going to burn down around you, and you may not even survive that. So either you can just give up and just go back to wherever you came from, cower in a corner, or you can stand up and do what God called you to do and be that man or woman that He's called you to be. According to Jasher, as we transition from this part where Joseph is sold into slavery, Judah went to the daughters of Shem for a wife for his eldest son. Her name was Tamar. Judah was the firstborn, destroyed his seed. And that's why he died. Genesis doesn't really go into the details on this, but we do know that he died before he had any offspring. Then the secondborn went in, and he knew that if I do this, then I'm going to raise up seed for my brother, and I didn't like him. This is not really talked about too much. He didn't really want to do what he should have done. He liked her, but he didn't like her that much to where he was going to give seed to his brother, who was dead. So he died also. Now, Judah could have decided to do the right thing at this point. But he decided that, well, you know, my first two sons died because of their stupidity. Why should I want my third one to die for the same reason? I'm going to marry him off to somebody else. And Tamar, she can cool her heels a while, and I'm just going to go about my life and forget about her. Well, through a process of time, God had a different plan. God had him in a place where he lost his wife. And he mourned for her. And he had, it took him a while, but he got through that. And then he decided he was going to go shear sheep with his friends. And then somebody came up to her and said, "Is not your father-in-law going to shear sheep?" I had to ask this question. But realizing that she was of the grandchild of Shem, a descendant of Eber, was in the same line as his father, Isaac. There was something that was about that whole situation that clicked in my head. Just because things don't always work out the way we think they should work out, God has a plan. He's not going to go back and away from it. He's going to guide us through it whether we want to or not, whether we want to be part of it or not. He's either going to use us or he's going to use somebody else. But because Tamar was of the descendant of Shem, who was Melchizedek, the line of Messiah had to be established through the line of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, down to Judah and Tamar. And if you notice something too, that never is mentioned again after this. But Judah and Tamar are mentioned. And then in fact, the Prezites, Prez means to break forth, to bust forward, to come out quickly. He was the firstborn. It's mentioned a couple different times, the Prezites and Zerites, the brothers. These are mentioned over and over again throughout the scriptures. Prezites, they had an inheritance in the kingdom. Had it not been for Tamar's persistence, it would have been a hollow kingdom because there wouldn't have been any descendants after that. But because she was persevered in this, because she was knowing what God wanted her to do, it's not said so explicitly in Jasher or in Genesis or any place I've read at, but she was the one that God wanted to use. He raised up Ruth also. And Ruth is part of the genealogy of Messiah, Yeshua. Just because you have a low position in life does not necessarily mean that's a low position in God's kingdom. You must listen to what he says, do what he says when he says it. It could very well be just as Jacob's own mother. guiding him along on what God had already told her to do. That he said to her that the younger will be in over the oldest. Jacob over Esau. And Esau was going to be subservient to Jacob. Where Jacob's always painted in a bad light as a deceiver, it could have very well been mentioned that did Tamar also deceive Judah? Or did Judah fail in his mission that God gave him? He failed on so many different occasions. He could have manned up and done the right thing all along, but he didn't do it. Yes, he was responsible for allowing them not to kill Joseph. Again, Joseph, if he had died during that time, where would Israel be at that, after that? They would have died, and the whole world would have died in the famine. Something to think about when we think about how all these things fit together. Just because, like I said before, you have a low position, does not necessarily mean you're going to stay there. God elevates those who will elevate, and he brings down those who will bring down. America was brought up because of what they did at the very beginning. They dedicated the country into God. And yet, look at where we're at today. Not such a good place. We abandon God on every single corner, every single place. We've blotted out his name from all public records just about. If they could do away with all of us, they would do it. And they're working on it, believe you me. And we need to be vigilant in prayer and asking God what to do at this time and this hour. So we can be just like Tamar, just like Joseph. Be that man, be that woman that God called you to be. And don't shrink back from when he says, now the battle's in your front door. What are you going to do? Are you going to depend upon me? Or are you going to back off and go hiding in the corner somewhere, hoping that somebody else will come deliver you? But you, he may be having you deliver your family, your town, your city, in prayer and supplication and fasting and weeping for those people. Because he loves us all, but we choose the wrong path almost all the time. Look at how many times Judah went back and forth and back and forth. He could have stood up against Reuben and those. Reuben went back, tried to get Joseph, but he was already gone. He walked away. Judah, in this point, he walked away. But God wasn't finished with Judah. He's not mentioned very much after this. But through Judah came the Messiah. Through Tamar's persistence in knowing what she had to do, it brought forth the Messiah years and years later. Tamar didn't know the part that she played. Judah definitely didn't know the part he played. But if you look back in the genealogy of things, Tamar and Ruth are in that family line of Yeshua. Because they were bold enough to do what God required them to do. And where do you fit in all this? Where does he called you to do? What he's called you to do, and where has he called you to be at? And if he's called you to be somewhere else other than where you're at right now, why are you still there? Why are you still in that town? Or why are you still in that group? If he's called you out of that, why are you still there? You need to ask yourself and ask God, what can you do? If Tamar wasn't persistent, the line of Yeshua would have taken a whole different route. Just because Judah's character was not suitable, in the end, Tamar's firstborn Perez, and without him there, would have had no Boaz. Because through Tamar came Boaz, and Boaz brought in Ruth, and Ruth brought in their descendant, and then David. King David, the ruddy little guy who was just a sheep herder. He brought him in the picture because he was a man after God's own heart. But he had, again, he persisted in doing what God called him to do, to be the king of Israel. He didn't know how to be king. He knew how to lead sheep. But you don't ever hear him complain about that. So you would have no Boaz, David, nor Solomon, we would not know where we would fit into the mosaic. We do not know where we fit in the mosaic of life, of the kingdom. And without you, there would be a big hole and an empty place where you should be. But as it is, we're all here for the same reason, to serve our living King, Yeshua. And that's all I have.
Well, thank you, Rick. That was good, and it was a good reminder that we all need to be aware of being in our place is very important, because that's the will of Yahweh. And if we don't do our job, then something is going to get awry. Does anybody have a question or comment about this Torah portion? And it can be on anything that's, you know, in the teaching or not in the teaching. Well, until somebody raises their hand, I have this comment to make. One of the facts of this that we get from the book of Jasher is that Tamar was in the line of Melchizedek. And so think about this. Of all the women in Yeshua's lineage, Tamar is the one that preserved in his physical genealogy his connection to be Melchizedek. He was not a Levite, but he was from the line of Melchizedek. He was from that heavenly order. And so that was Tamar's role, was to preserve the Melchizedek line so that Yeshua could come some 4,000 years later, 3,800 years later or so, and you know, fulfill all the promises of salvation and his sacrifice and all, and have legal... he could be legally, physically in the line of Melchizedek. Anybody have another comment or question?